Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn Movie Blog, which you can visit at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, your host, and on this episode I am welcoming first-time Scorncast guest co-host Blake Wilding. Blake is here to talk about Gerard Butler's new romantic comedy, Playing for Keeps, which is currently holding strong with a 4% critical approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. We were actually going to take this week off, but then we saw that number and, you know.
Hi. You're Lewis's dad? I'm Denise, Samantha's mom.
Have we met before?
Not that I remember, and I'd remember.
You look very familiar to me.
Oh, I get that all the time.
Come on, help me out. How do I know you?
Okay, doctors tell me running back Orlando Jones has suffered a torn ACL and will not be returning for the
second. That's it! Yeah, you're a sportscaster on TV.
I was. You see, you're not the only one who used to be someone, Coach. Well, I'll see you when I see you.
Yeah, see ya.
So, Blake, welcome to your first episode of Scorncast.
Hey.
Playing for keeps. I feel like I put you right in the shit for this one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you want to work through it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, just in the sense that this is, at least according to Rotten Tomatoes, one of the very worst movies of the year. I feel like I owe you an apology.
You gave me an out. You said I could have watched Red Dawn.
I did. Yeah, actually. Before we get too deep into a discussion of this movie, I wanted to ask you, so Blake, this holiday season, what do you really want?
Does it have to pertain to the movie?
No, it's a rhetorical question that I don't really even need an answer to, because I just want to put you on the spot, because that's the poster tagline for Playing for Keeps. And I wanted to begin the review of Playing for Keeps by talking about this poster. What is this poster, exactly? Like, if it's possible for anyone listening to this to Google image search it, they should. I'll try to remember to link to it in the post, but let me try to explain it for people who can't look it up at the moment. This is one of those really boring movie posters where, like, in lieu of any sort of creativity, it's just kind of compartmentalized pictures of the cast.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe this is a romantic comedy thing, because I definitely remember that Something Borrowed and He's Just Not That Into You had the same sort of design. It's so generic. Playing for Keeps, the poster, they have the five main cast members, in order of importance, I would say Gerard Butler, Jessica Biel, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Dennis Quaid, Uma Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
And on the poster, each star has this, like, weird, brightly colored laser light background. I don't really know how to explain this, but to me, okay, remember when you were in grade school and it was picture day? And you could choose, like, the standard
pattern. Emerald.
You know where I'm going with this, right? Like, the emerald, like...
Sapphire.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And Dennis Quaid picked House Fire.
Do they even offer those for kids anymore? It might be, like, an 80s, 90s kind of thing. But all of these portraits look like that to me. This poster has these actors in, like, five rectangle compartments of different sizes and orientations, all positioned around the title and the tagline of the movie. And they all have, like, vibrant colors, you know, Dennis Quaid, House Fire, Jessica Biel, a jungle in the Amazon, maybe? all these stars are smiling their gorgeous star smiles, except for Gerard Butler. He has the biggest rectangle of all five cast members, but he has a white background. And he's smirking, not smiling, and he's also in the bottom left corner.
Well, he's serious.
He is serious. And actually, that's a discussion point that we kind of need to talk about, too. But do you think that that's a legitimate picture of Uma Thurman?
I don't know.
It looks like some Beowulf shit. Like, she looks like fake Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy.
Oh.
I mean, not bearded and old. I'm just saying, like, it just looks like a bunch of pixels put together. I mean, she's barely in the movie. You kind of have to assume that she didn't show up for poster glamour shot day, right?
Well, where was she looking? She was never looking at that angle in the movie.
But also, it's weird because everyone else on the poster is dressed in, like, normal clothes, and then it kind of looks to me like Uma Thurman is in a science fiction movie.
Yeah, Gattaca too.
Yes. Oh my god, this is actually a sequel to Gattaca.
Playing for James.
Oh god, I would rather watch that movie.
Duh.
Yeah. One more thing about this, just going on the poster here, if you didn't know what this movie was about, if you just passed by this poster on display in a movie theater, look at how Gerard Butler is styled in this picture with the hair and the stubble and the attitude and the leather jacket. Would you be forgiven for thinking this was a movie about the life of George Michael?
There's only one dude on her, though, besides him, so I don't know.
That's true. There is a... The ratio of women to men on the poster is not accurate.
Unless, like, Dennis Quaid is the undercover cop.
Oh, Jesus. It would probably... I mean, I guess the title, Playing for Keeps, would be confusing because you would think that would be a movie about Phil Collins or, like, Genesis. But, you know, Gerard Butler definitely looks more George Michael than Phil Collins in this picture. Whatever happened to Phil Collins?
I don't know. I'm too disgusted looking at Dennis Quaid.
Okay, well, here's some better questions for you. Like you said, I actually let you pick which movie would be your first, like, Scorncast adventure, and you settled on Playing for Keeps. Was it the Rotten Tomatoes thing? Like, the fact that it had a single-digit critical approval percentage, and it made you think this right here is the one?
Kind of. Well, part of it was I didn't want to watch the original Red Dawn again, which would have been background for Red Dawn remake. But, you know, also, it can't be so bad, you know. How bad can a movie be?
Let's talk about that, actually.
Playing for Keeps, bad. Yeah.
Well, I mean, how much did you know about this movie before seeing it?
I saw an ad, so, like, I knew the whole plot from that one ad. You know, because he's, like, making out with Jessica Biel in the ad, but he's trying to be seduced by everyone else.
I actually went into this movie pretty blind. I'd seen the poster, but somehow I never saw the trailer for this thing, despite the fact that I go to the movies like 10 times a week. So your drinking to get through the Stormcast, so it must have been pretty bad for you. But I do want to point out what I did see was this one particular television commercial, which kind of became an event for me that I just really enjoyed every time it would come on while I was watching TV. I want to play my favorite part of that commercial, which literally is going to take about 3 seconds. So I'm going to do that now.
You ever think what it might have been like if I'd screwed all up?
That's Gerard Butler talking. And true story, I became obsessed with his delivery of that line because the first time I saw this commercial, I had no idea what he was saying. And I had this great idea for a recurring Saturday Night Live sketch where, like, Gerard Butler tries to order things from the menus of really posh European restaurants and nobody knows what he's ordering. I just thought that would be fun. But let's get the idea of this movie out of the way, and then we can take our knives out and our forks out and dig in as we talk about that. This movie is about what? The immense fuckability of soccer players and or Gerard Butler? No?
Kind of. It's about once you reach a certain age and you're single and... somebody bangable comes along.
You mean from Gerard Butler's point of view, somebody bangable comes along? Or do you mean from all the women that Gerard Butler either bangs, intends to bang, wants to bang, but doesn't seal the banging deal? Like, from which perspective here?
Yeah, that one, from the women. Like, you know, in the real world, it's hard to meet people to date and have sex with, I'm sure. I think a soccer game, a soccer coach, soccer whatever league, is a legitimate way to meet people, and these women have no other way to meet people.
Yeah.
I assume. They don't need a dad for their kids, they just want a man. Well, so that's kind of refreshing.
Isn't that what all women want in romantic comedies?
Helen Hunt did.
Yeah, that is true. And she got Mel Gibson, so bully for her. But yeah, Gerard Butler is this superstar soccer player who's retired and fallen on hard times, both in terms of his finances and his family relationships. He has an ex-wife who is always frowning at him. She's played by Jessica Biel, of course. And he has one of those adorable Moppet sons. And why exactly has he fallen on hard times? Does the movie ever make this clear? Like, is it because he gave up his soccer career and his celebrity to have a family? Or is he just retired from playing soccer because he's older and that's what happens to older soccer players? Their lives turn to shit?
Good point. I didn't think about that. But I think part of it's implied that because he moved to America and we don't value soccer players... Because, like, he went to pawn his memorabilia.
That's true.
You know, and then you look at his car, which is really expensive and kind of out of date. So you kind of get the idea that he spent too much. There's, like, a montage in the beginning where he was a soccer player for at least 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, he should have some money. Yeah, they don't really explain why he blows through everything.
He's financially irresponsible, really.
They never shame him for, like, not having saved enough money for his kid.
Yeah, that's true.
Jessica Biel should have called him on that.
Jessica Biel and Gerard Butler's relationship is sort of really, really central to this movie. I mean, it takes over the movie in its last half. I mean, I was generally kind of bored watching the whole thing, especially in that last half. But it's entirely possible, like, I started thinking about what flavor of potato chips I was going to buy on the way home from the theater, and I missed something. But I don't feel like the nature of their relationship is explored very well.
Yeah, it was kind of just like, I was 20 once, and he was rich, and he took me around the world.
We've heard it all before. But Gerard Butler, yeah, he's dodging his landlord in the beginning of the movie because he owes him money. I think during the opening credits, you hear messages left for him on his answering machine. And isn't one from a credit card company saying that he's overdue on his bill?
Yeah.
Like you said, as destitute as he's supposed to be, he drives a really nice car. I know nothing about cars. I don't even know what kind of car that was that he was driving. But it looked a little too nice for somebody who's struggling to make ends meet.
Well, I don't know anything about cars either. But I think it was kind of implied that the car was nice, but not new.
Oh, he just took really good care of it.
No. Well, because it was supposed to be a big deal when he drove Dennis Quaid's car.
Oh, right, yeah.
But, like, I don't know anything about cars. They looked equally...
They looked equally nice.
Out of my price range.
Yes.
Except one was red.
That's true. Well, yeah, the gist of this movie is that Gerard Butler's son is on a soccer team, the coach of which is doing a really terrible job, so Gerard Butler replaces him, and the kids love Gerard Butler, but more importantly, the kids' mothers love him even more. And that's pretty much what the entire middle chunk of the movie is, these soccer moms throwing themselves at him. But playing for keeps is weird because it's sort of reticent to go full tilt and become a legitimate sex comedy because of the hang-ups that Butler has in regards to getting back together with his ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
But the ex-wife is engaged to this new guy who seems pretty cool. I mean, honestly, this movie is all over the place.
I don't think the new guy had a line of dialogue until...
Until he gives his blessing to them getting back together in the end of the movie.
Except he might have given one, like, what are you doing here?
Probably. He had like a couple lines where he was talking to the son to show that like he communicates with Gerard Butler's son better than Gerard Butler does.
Mm-hmm.
Not in any way that like serves the movie or anything like that. But what do you make of Gerard Butler as an actor?
I don't know. I like him.
Do you?
I haven't seen him in that much. I don't know. There was a preview for like a Jason Statham movie. This might not be relevant, but I thought it was interesting that they're both famous enough now that they can use their native accents.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, like, Catherine Zeta-Jones had a not...
Welsh accent.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Freakish language she speaks.
here's the thing. I do not like Gerard Butler generally, but I think a lot of that is because of some of the movies he's popped up in lately. I would definitely single out The Ugly Truth and The Bounty Hunter, which I think are two of the worst romantic comedies and some of the worst movies in the last few years. And he was doing the same thing in both of those movies where he's like the super awesome, swaggering, virile, macho man who teaches the uptight female lead a thing or two about having fun. And that's like one of my least favorite movie trope things ever. And I think what I learned from this movie is that I find Gerard Butler really hard to take when he's playing a character who's happy and confident. Because it seems like he so easily settles into that trope. And I think that kind of role might be the prequel to this movie, because I can imagine him as a misogynistic soccer star really easily. But when this movie picks up, he's sad and alone and feeling pretty crummy about himself. And I gotta say, he didn't bother me like he usually does at all.
If you become like a romantic comedy star, you kind of build on the same character. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, that's the take you got.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he definitely has this mythology now where he teaches women, you know, teaches women how to have fun, like you said.
Yeah.
But maybe now this is the sequel.
It almost seems like it's going in that direction in several places, and then it kind of pulls itself back, right?
Him teaching them how to have fun?
Well, I mean, just in terms of, like, the moms that he starts sort of cavorting with on the soccer team. He is with Judy Greer, I think, first. And Judy Greer is an actress from Arrested Development and Jawbreaker and a lot of other things that I've really, really loved her in.
She's not on the poster, though.
She's not on the poster. She should be on the poster. She should be on the poster before pixelated Uma Thurman.
No, I disagree.
Do you think that Uma Thurman deserves her spot?
Oh, yeah.
But Judy Greer, like, shows up as this kind of clingy, over-emotional basket case mom who, like, comes on to Gerard Butler really strongly, and she shows up at his house one night, and the scene plays out in really weird ways. I guess it kind of encapsulates the movie as a whole, which is kind of just it going in circles, because she comes on to him and he tells her, like, she needs to have better self-esteem. And she thanks him and then she leaves, right? And I was like, wow, I didn't expect that. I thought that this was going to turn into, like, a sex romp kind of thing. And then there's a knock at the door, and he answers it, and it's her. And what does she tell him? Something like, I promise I won't cry when we make love, or something like that? And then they do it. So I was just kind of like, oh, well, I take back everything nice that I was thinking about this scene.
But she had self-esteem right away.
It was like a switch.
It was, yeah, it was a fast switch.
This is actually a very empowering movie when you think about it.
I don't know.
I think it's very mixed message. Would you at least agree with that?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of real in a way. Of course, every movie has messages, but I feel like the messages were mixed because mm-hmm. life is just like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Not that this movie thought that much out, but, like, you know, I didn't think too hard about what it said about women's sexuality just because, you know, sometimes life just happens, and it just happens weird like this.
Oh,
sometimes,
sure.
Sometimes you'll just hook up with a woman who will cry and then never see you again. I don't know.
I would actually commend one thing here. Catherine Zeta-Jones plays a former ESPN sportscaster. Is that what she is?
I think she was just like a local news anchor.
Okay, she's an anchor, and she has connections, I think, at ESPN or something like that, because...
Yeah. Gerard, she gets him at his job.
Yeah, Gerard Butler is striving to become a professional sportscaster, and when he meets her, she's one of the moms of the soccer players that he coaches, the sparks fly or whatever. Well, I mean, it's sort of like right away, she's like, I'm going to have sex with him eventually. And she takes him to do some test recording at a TV studio. And don't they end up, like, doing it at the studio?
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the things I kind of did like about that was all these women that come in and out of Gerard Butler's life, also Uma Thurman, which we haven't talked about yet, but they're involved in sexual situations of varying degrees with Gerard Butler. And what I thought was going to happen, since the through line of this movie is Gerard Butler getting back together with Jessica Biel, I thought we were going to be treated to some awful ending where Gerard Butler and Jessica Biel are out at, like, some dinner restaurant kind of deal, and all of these women end up showing up there, and there's all this, like, interaction and him, like, you know, stealing away for moments with each one and saying, like, leave me alone, I can't be with you, I love my wife now. But that never happens, and the stuff with Catherine Zeta-Jones I thought was at least kind of refreshing in that they have sex, and it's kind of not a big deal for either of them. They just do it. And nothing ever comes of that, which is makes it kind of like a boring, I guess, thing to watch. But at the same time, it's kind of nice that they can let two adults have, like, no strings attached sex, and then it's not that big of a deal.
I was more annoyed that the movie said it was a bad thing for him to do that because he left his kid at her home to go have sex with her all night.
That's fair. But nothing ever really comes of that either.
Yeah, he never got his comeuppance for that.
Yeah.
He never apologized for that.
He's supposed to be spending the day with his son, and he leaves his son at Catherine Zeta-Jones's house with, what, her housekeeper and her daughter?
And an iPad, yeah.
And an iPad. But on the plus side, the kid learns how to play Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is something that I feel like kids should know already, right? Like, was this movie on a shelf for a couple years?
Well, Gerard Butler was broke.
Oh, right. He couldn't afford an iPad to show his son how to play Angry Birds. That's why he's such a lousy father. That's Jessica
kind of,
Biel's whole
I was kind of annoyed at that because I feel like I spent many a childhood afternoon bored.
Yeah.
We're supposed to think for a second that, oh my god, he's the worst father in the world for leaving his kid at this house all day, but I don't know, maybe because I'm an only child. I spend a lot of time alone.
But, I mean, to be fair, that kid is an only child as well. So there you go. I think you have a point here. Maybe we're not shown a lot of Jessica Biel and the kid hanging out, but maybe she has him, like, engaged in taekwondo and ballet and all these crazy after-school activities.
She never drove him to soccer or saw his soccer matches.
She didn't.
Until, like, the end when
that's true.
Mattered.
Well, that, I mean, characters in romantic comedies have a way of doing things only when they matter. So what can we do? Dennis Quaid and Uma Thurman, why are they in this movie at all?
Going back to the poster, I hate that he's on it. Because he's not a good guy, but he's smiling and...
Dennis Quaid's got a nice smile. You think, hey, look at this poster. Dennis Quaid is smiling in front of, like, a barn burning. This is going to be a fun, sexy film.
But they could have put, like, Judy Greer's face behind them.
Screaming because it's her barn that's burning down.
She was his ex-wife. They never said that.
Okay. Wow, there's so many layers in this movie. No, but I just feel like Dennis Quaid and Uma Thurman play a married couple. Dennis Quaid is a sleazebag pretty much right away. Like, you identify him as that. He gives Gerard Butler an envelope full of money to buy uniforms for the kids, to pay for, like, I guess anything that they need. But also, like, under the arrangement that his son will be the goalie, I think it is, right?
Yeah.
So, like, right away, you know he's kind of a dubious guy. But he's married to Uma Thurman, and of course Uma Thurman catches Gerard Butler's eye, or maybe it's vice versa, I don't remember. But Dennis Quaid invites Gerard Butler into his life and, you know, his luxurious house, and lets him borrow his luxurious cars. And you find out at this party sequence where Gerard Butler comes over and sort of gets to regale all of Dennis Quaid's rich friends with stories about his fantastic soccer career, that Dennis Quaid is cheating on Uma Thurman.
Well, she knows he cheats on her.
Yeah, she's aware.
But she's not allowed to cheat on him.
Right. And Uma Thurman sort of starts to flirt with Gerard Butler. What purpose does any of this serve? You know, all through the movie, Jessica Biel is disappointed in Gerard Butler. Mm-hmm. And we come to a scene where Uma Thurman surprises Gerard Butler at his house. She tries to have sex with him. I don't know if the movie is that explicit about the fact that he doesn't want to have sex with her, because I feel like they get interrupted before anything happens, and she has to, like, sneak out.
He knows Dennis Quaid paid somebody to follow her.
Okay.
But also, Gerard Butler, part of his success by the end of the movie is because of Dennis Quaid. So as much of a jerk as he knows Dennis Quaid's character is, he doesn't want to mess that up by sleeping with her.
But, I mean, why is his success owed to Dennis Quaid?
Well, he gives him money to pay rent.
I mean,
he gives him his car.
Does he, though? Because isn't the money that Gerard Butler uses to pay his rent the money that Dennis Quaid gave him for the soccer stuff? Or are we to assume that he gave Gerard Butler that money, like, this is for the soccer stuff, wink, nudge, you can just take this and use it on whatever you want?
Yeah, but he's his new friend, and he's helping him out. He helped him meet people at the party. I feel like it paints the picture that Dennis Quaid is useful to Gerard Butler.
I guess so, but he's also, like, a really sleazy guy.
Yeah.
In the end of this movie, like, you find out, you know, Dennis Quaid did, in fact, have Uma Thurman followed by a private investigator who took pictures. And at that point, I was just kind of lost in the narrative, because when Dennis Quaid confronts Gerard Butler at the soccer game, he pulls out these pictures and he's like, I know you slept with my wife.
One soccer game Jessica Biel was at.
Yeah, so she has another excuse to, like, see this happen and go, oh, Gerard Butler, you scallywag. But also, like, who is this private investigator? Is he narcoleptic? Because Uma Thurman was in Gerard Butler's house trying to seduce him for, like, a minute, and then she left. So where was the, like, what did you, I was really confused by that plot point.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe he got more money if he proved that they had sex. No, I don't know. I really actually hated that.
It's just a really dumb scene. Like, the whole thing is really stupid. He and Dennis Quaid get into a fight, like, on the soccer field, as the kids win. And then the kids, like, run over, and they think that Dennis Quaid and Gerard Butler, who are, like, rolling around on the ground together, are, like, celebrating the win. So they're like, yay, and they all kind of, like, dogpile on top of them. It's just one of those really, like, I know you have to tie all this stuff together, screenwriter, but really, this is what you came up with?
You said something about it never elevated to, like, sex romp,
mm-hmm.
like, fun, but it played with it with the Uma Thurman character. So, like, I hate that, like, you know, we're supposed to buy that she did this, like, she broke into his house,
mm-hmm.
and pictures were taken of it, you know, at an amazing angle from a photographer that we never saw. I hate that we're supposed to buy that, but we're not supposed to buy that Gerard Butler can't tell Dennis Quaid or Jessica Biel the truth and then buy it.
Well,
does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
If I'm supposed to buy it, they should buy it.
And also, like, the Uma Thurman character, and I would say half of the Judy Greer character, seem like they're coming out of a different movie than the rest of Playing for Keeps.
That's why Uma Thurman deserves to be on the cover, on the poster.
Because she represents the 20% of the movie that is the sex romp.
She represents, you know, I got flashbacks to Batman and Robin, where...
Oh, yeah, that's fair. The campiness of her, like, of her role and the way she played it, I guess.
Yeah, she knows the quality of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say that for anybody else.
I would agree. I would probably agree with that. Actually, while we're on that subject, I think this movie could have committed to one of these things. It could have been like just a redemption story about an estranged father. It could have been a sex farce about a hot soccer coach and a bunch of cougar soccer moms. It could have been a relationship drama about two people who fell out of love, realizing what they saw in each other before they broke up. It could have been a movie about an older guy who's out of work, trying to balance the search for a new career with his family life. But Playing for Keeps is kind of like, fuck it, I'll be all of these.
Yeah. With a little bit of let's have kids say adult things in there.
For at least like one or two scenes, there's a lot of that in there.
Well, there's only two or three scenes of children, so it's funny that
yeah.
They tried to wedge it in.
I'll throw into that list I just said, wizened child comedy. A good thing to bring up that I want to talk about is I read that the original title for this movie was Playing the Field.
Playing the Field.
Theme songs, which I think is a better title than Playing for Keeps. It's got the soccer and the sex illusions. But I would say that after the movie makes its motives super apparent with this whole Gerard Butler, Jessica Biel thing, and
yeah.
it settles into this interminable Butler Biel, will there, won't they roundabout, I thought of two titles that work much better. Let me know what you think of these.
Scoring.
What? Oh, Scoring.
Scoring.
Okay. I thought you were saying scoring, like scornin', and I was...
No, hey, okay, what you're...
Sorry,
no.
This movie could be called Wafflers, right? That's that's a good title. Or I thought Dickin' Around was better, like Dickin' with an apostrophe. Because,
no.
I mean, do you... That's... Isn't that... Do you say no?
Yeah.
Because I think that that's not, like, literally Dickin' Around, because Gerard Butler doesn't do a whole lot of that. I just mean in terms of these characters not having their minds made up for the entire last, like, 40 minutes of the movie and going around and around and around.
I don't know.
You don't like it?
No, I was quoting the movie.
Does somebody say, I don't know, a lot?
I feel like Jessica Biel's whole character isn't a giant, I don't know.
You know, Jessica Biel and Gerard Butler, their characters, like, I'm sure on some level they're nice people. Why don't you call me when you sort this shit out and tell me what you guys decided to do? Because honestly, I don't care. And I'll be honest with you, Blake, if they call to let me know, I probably would just let it go to voicemail. But I wish them the best, because, you know, they're a nice white suburban couple, so mazel tov.
So, like, Jessica Biel's character is calling you and leaving a message. Like, please call me.
We need to let you know what happened. And I just delete it. I'm like, I never got that message. Yeah, they do have that one scene where they go out to a crab restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the whole, like, flirty interplay between them is really weird because Jessica Biel has, like, a chunk of crab on her cheek. And I actually wrote this dialogue down. Gerard Butler's like, crab cheek. And Jessica Biel says, crap cheek? And Gerard Butler says, crab. And Jessica Biel goes, crab. And Gerard Butler goes, crab lips. And Jessica Biel says, gross. Thank you. That was my dramatic reenactment of the best scene in Playing for Keeps.
Yay,
yeah.
Clap, clap.
Yeah.
Wait. I feel like Jessica Biel says gross in every movie.
Does she?
Like, I feel like it's just a line she can't deliver.
That's how, like, she actually feels about the movies that she makes, and it's just coming out. She doesn't have the reputation for showing up in things that are necessarily very good, which is why I sort of said earlier in this podcast, of course she would play the role of the frowning ex-wife. I mean, she's made for this role, probably. One question for you. Playing for Keeps is rated PG-13 for some sexual situations, language, and a brief, intense image. What was the intense image? Because I can't remember it.
I feel like you see his balls at one point.
I don't think you do.
Oh, okay. I must have fallen asleep.
This is a fever dream. I mean, would the MPAA, like, have the right to rate Gerard Butler's balls as intense? How does someone have intense balls?
No, could it be... It kind of creeped me out when the landlord was spying on Gerard Butler.
But is that an intense image?
I'm trying to think. Like, there was no boner or boob.
That would be, like, labeled nudity or something like that. Or they would just be blatant about it and say, like, rated PG-13 for Gerard Butler's balls. But what is an intense image? I don't remember. Like, there is nothing about this movie that is, like, intense or high stakes or anything like that at all.
Oh.
What?
I'm pretty sure the intense graphic image was when he was watching that horror movie with his son.
Oh, you're right. He does watch a horror movie.
A woman is, like, giving birth. In a hospital, maybe? I don't know, that's kind of gross,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. She's, like, in a hospital and there's, like, a monster coming out of her or trying to eat her or something like that.
Did you for a second think that that was Jessica Biel?
No? They were watching home movies of the son's birth?
No, I thought it was totally, like, a your mom was an actress, and she starred in really bad Italian horror movies before I met her.
So, Blake, do you want to grade Playing for Keeps?
It didn't offend me, so I can't give it an F. I'll give it a D+.
A D plus.
Yeah, it's because I like Uma Thurman a lot.
Well, there you go. Pixels or no pixels?
Ignoring the bad Photoshop job on the poster.
Yeah, that's an illustration, I'm relatively sure. I am going to go a little bit higher than you. I'm going to give it a C-, I think, just because the initial parts of this movie, I probably didn't do a very good job of explaining it, but I found them completely benign up until the parts where we actually start to get into the whole, oh, this is where this movie is going with this Gerard Butler, Jessica Biel bullshit that happens over and over and over again. I can't tell you how many times they plan to do something and then cancel their plans and then plan to do something again. It was exhausting, and I left the theater very frustrated and alone because I saw it in an empty theater by myself and had a nice look of shame from the attendant who came in to clean. She was like, really? Really? I was like, I have nothing better to do on a Saturday morning. Sorry, I'm gonna leave, and I didn't have any popcorn, so you don't have anything to sweep up. I just thought of something. Playing for Keeps would have been a good title if Jessica Biel's character was named Keeps. And that's going to do it for this episode of Scorncast. As always, you can check out past episodes at scornpop.blogspot.com. You can email us at scornpop@gmail.com. You can find Blake on Twitter at Blake Wilding. You can find me on Twitter at Jasper Frowns. And you can find Gerard Butler in his next negligible movie. Whatever it is, we'll probably end up doing a Scorncast episode about it.
Playing for Keys.